It is now 10:10 a.m. on March the 8th, 1990. And I'm in the offices, in the studios of the Red River Dance and Performing Company at 824 Main Avenue in Fargo, North Dakota. And I'm visiting with Kathy Gasper, who is the executive director of the agency. Kathy, the other day you mentioned that there are ups and downs in this artistic life, and that sometimes you wonder if it's all worthwhile, and then you have real periods of exaltation, I suppose.
Yes, you do. It's either very, very high, or it's a very, very low and depressing state. It all is based on finances, being a nonprofit organization. You can only do as much as the budgets would allow, and if you've never really been involved in artistic endeavors, like even if you were, if you've worked in community theater, you'd understand the amount of time that it takes to be dedicated to a particular project. So when you're an artist, I think we always work far more than most people. You're looking at usually 12, 14 hour days. They're huge.
Did you always have hopes and aspirations to be doing this?
No. We moved here after both Eddie and I had careers in theater and dance in New York and abroad and across America. And when we moved here, we decided to raise a family. And after the decision to give up so-called the show business life in New York, not wanting to raise our children there, we were looking for other options across America, which to them. He had accepted a position, an annual contract from Morgan State as associate professor, director, and choreographer there. And we thought we'd give it a go for a season here while we continue to send out resumes to other universities or other regional theaters and dance companies. And the whole thing just snowballed into this incredible artistic thing.
Did you work through Mr. Hansen of Morehead State,
yes,
of the summer theater and the student theater, who he does turn to New York and to the various organizations to get people. And you and your husband came here
under that situation.
And you liked the community? And
we were very, very impressed with how much support, there was so much support to the arts, for the arts. We were amazed that the population size was indeed able to sustain not only the university systems and their art and theater departments and their art series, but also community theater and opera, symphony, and museums. And that was one of the guiding factors, I think, in our becoming so terribly involved with dance here, was the fact that they had all these wonderful arts organizations, but not a solid dance element to match that. And that rather probably disturbed me more than I realized at the beginning, and that's where the energy probably was based.
What was the year of your short-term deal with her?
I believe Eddie came up to do Straw Hat in 78, that summer season. And then I had simply started to work with a few of his students through that theater program. And when people realized that I started to teach, then the calls came in, and eventually working with a few students led into this entire nonprofit organization. And that really started in the fall of 79.
Let's go back to your youth. Were you born in New York State?
I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I did not want to dance. I went to my first dance lesson and was in my first recital because my sister needed a partner and my mother thought I should do that. And I did that and I did not enjoy it and I thought it was a waste of time. I would rather have been on a bicycle and playing outside and doing stuff like that. And then I went to class for a little bit, probably. I was probably around 7. And I really didn't enjoy it at all. And I thought there were better things to do with your time. Until one day I had seen something on television. And in observing this, I asked, they looked like they were having so much fun. It was probably like an Ed Sullivan special or something to that effect. And I asked my mother, do they really get paid to do that? I couldn't believe that. And then it sort of probably made all sense to me, all that training in that studio, all that hard work, eventually the outcome is a performing art. And so then I went back, and it was probably about 11, 10 and a half, 11, and gratefully so, had wonderful, wonderful instructors who realized that there was a natural talent in regards to movement and musicality. And they guided me very, very well to the point where I became a professional dancer with holding my union cards at the age of 14.
That's remarkable. What was your family name? That is
Smith.
Your maiden name was Smith.
Were How any, exciting, I know.
Any of your parents or your brothers, siblings, musical or
no.
artistic at all?
No. My mother enjoyed going to the theater, and we always had music at our house in regards to phonographs. I can remember the first stereo hi-fi that came in. You know, that was kind of really exciting in our home. But none of them were ever active in theater. And in my my family, both preceding generations, that had been Eddie had an uncle who was responsible for his career, theoretical music blanco, but none of my people were doing it.
Then you went to New York, I suppose, as many aspiring actresses and dancers.
Well, I started out when I went to, I studied series in Milwaukee with the Milwaukee Ballet Company. And there were some fine teachers at the time throughout the city. And then I took a train into Chicago. 3-4 times a week, so that I could get the opportunity to study with some wonderful people that were there at the time. And in the meantime, between Chicago and Milwaukee, I had worked a lot of summer stock, a lot of regional dance companies, and a lot of commercials and films in that Chicago, Milwaukee vicinity. And I went to New York, and the first time I was very lucky all the way from the very beginning. My entrance into New York was working with a gentleman named Doc Severinsen, who was with the Tonight Show band on Johnny Carson's show. And I was able to play one of the one most wonderful rooms in New York at the Plaza. And so I walked into New York with a job. And that's rare, does that happen? From that, many, many things happened. That's how I met my husband. I actually was taking class one day when the show was running. We were there about 6 weeks, I think. And the show in the evening, and during the day we would take class. We were going to audition for hopefully other shows that are coming up if you would be interested in moving on or not staying with the particular performance group that you were with. And I happened to be in class in New York. And in a place called Luigi's, who is one of the master jazz instructors in America today. And he came up to me, a gentleman walked in the door, and Luigi, the instructor, came up to me and said, this man would like to see you after class, he would like to audition you for a show. Well, needless to say, as a young lady in New York, that sounded a little bit bizarre. Normally auditions are held, you know, there are open calls and there are theaters and things. But it turned out that his name was Eddie Gasper, and he was indeed auditioning and scouting through classes and things for people to fill the act that he was directing for Judy Kern. She was with the Laughlin television series, with ring a bell for many people. And so I did audition for him, and we went to a rehearsal studio and sang and did things, and it turned out that she ended up picking boys for her act versus ladies, and I ended up signing a marriage contract instead of a performing contract, and ended up therefore this is Eddie Gasper. We then worked independently still, and we worked where I had assisted in various jobs, and we were married one day in New York in City Hall. He went off to open a show in Mexico, and I went back to class. We met each other in Chicago, in my hometown. About 2 weeks later, I decided we did not get married to be separated, and therefore the turnaround would be finally placed with both.
You suggested earlier that you had been in road companies across America and even overseas. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that. Was it with Eddie?
No, actually, one of the times I went over, the first time I went over to Italy, and I was there for about 6 weeks also, and it was simply on a scholarship in regards academically to an art history course, which was just incredible, whether you're an artist, a visual artist, or whether you are an artist in the performing arts, to have finally for the opportunity to see the Michelangelos and the Sistine Chapels and these wonderful things you see in books, to finally be able to really study them. And that's what originally got me over across the Atlantic. Out of that, then when I was studying there, I went into like the Italian Opera School of Ballet and studied there, and from there received contacts in the Wiesbaden Ballet Company and the English Modern Dance School. And so then I started, I came back home, worked in Chicago for a while in some dinner theaters in Summerstown, and started saving up my money to go back. So I was just very intrigued by all of that, and there were wonderful, wonderful instructors over there. Then I went back with a position in the Wiesbaden Ballet Company. But going over there, it was about the third trip, I think, I landed in London, and at that time, I did not know Eddie. And at that time, he was setting the musical comedy Sweet Charity for Bob Fosse with the London Company. And I went, actually thought, oh boy, I would really rather do charity if they were looking for American dancers than the ballet company right now. And so I actually knocked on the door, and the stage door, and said, is it possible if I could have an audition with him, who might I be able to see? And they said, well, you have to see Mr. Eddie Gasper. Now, this was probably 6 years before I saw him in this Norwegian dance class. And as we talked, our lives, our paths have just crossed numerous, numerous times, like that, moments away, without having been aware that it was me or it was him. So it's sort of kind of a fantasy, fairy tale kind of thing when you really realize you get into this dance class and then you finally meet them. But we've missed moments, so it was fun. I had a difficult time. I I flipped back and forth from the classical world to musical theater. And it was difficult for me to stay long in one versus the other because I liked both atmospheres. It would be like when I would be working with a ballet company and you would do a Swan Lake or you would do something in a standard classic and you would miss the brass and excitement on the Broadway stage. And then you'd say, okay, that's enough of this. I'm going to go back and just be an entertainer. And you go back and do that, and after you've done that for a while, you really miss the symphonic grandeur of the classical. I think that is what kept me eating as an artist, because I was flexible and versatile, enough to know where my strengths and weaknesses were in both elements. And I happened to be many times at the right time at the right place to have opportunities open up for me. I'm a better teacher because of having both elements.
I thought I detected that you were, in a way, torn between classical ballet and what you might call a musical comedy or a stage. And I can see where they both draw and both are interesting. I've seen some of your choreography, and I kind of suspect sometimes, I see some of Bob Fosse in the choreography that you and your husband perform, and that I suppose is no great surprise. He was an extraordinary fellow, and he was, I suppose, a great impact on the American stage.
Yeah, genius is how the dance world looks at him. The reason you see so much of it on choreography is because we admire and respect his approaches, subtlety that is so very rare, and a complete through line of choreographic purpose and reason why somebody's doing something. Eddie, having had been his assistant and associate for, I don't know, 12, 13 years, something like that, something's got to roll off. It's like when you work in the classical field, you become a Balanchine dancer, or you become a Lupe Serrano dancer. It depends who who you spend the time training with, or who's been your mentors. You take on that stylization. So I hope so. We want very much part of the signature of this company to reflect the American great choreographers. There are five that need to always have their style or their flavors continually in front of the public eye so we don't lose them.
Can you name five?
Oh, I don't know if I can do it this morning. There's Fosse, of course, and Bennett and Jerry Robbins, and the lady who is responsible for turning Agnes DeMille, who's responsible for turning putting ballets in musical comedies like Open Hold and Carousel. A young fellow coming up now who should probably be taking his stance is I'm sorry, I'll never think
you
tall, did. Tall gentleman.
Oh, right? Tommy Toon.
Tommy Toon, thank you.
Yes, charming dancer.
Yeah, he will, it's going to take, he's not that stature yet, but he thinks, again, he learned from these predecessors. He's learned very well. And I think that he will find as he matures, he's a pretty young kid yet, you know, I think as he matures and keeps working, he will find a stylization that will, should be on the new side.
It's a very fine dancer. Well, what I thought I saw in your work in past years here locally is the fast movement, you know, wing to wing and staccato. It's fast, it's driven, and I like it. Who does most of the choreography? Your husband?
No, we both do. I guess it's
a team.
It's a team. It depends on, there'll be times when he, and it depends what we're doing. If it's a Christmas show, or if it's a dance concert, or if it's original piece, original work, there are times when it will be all of his ball game, or it will all be all of mine, or there'll be times where we collaborate on the same product, or there'll be times when we will just observe and critique each other. For example, last season we premiered three new works in a thing called New Works in Jazz. One was the Just Count 5, 6, 7, 8, a suite, Count Basie's music and stylization. That was, other than probably one area where I worked with the ladies, that in totality would be considered Eddie's. The other piece called The Code of the Lost American would be in totality mine. And yet another one that we work on, I'm trying to think of a good example. The Nutcracker, the divestment from Nutcracker and Christmas show 2 seasons ago. Again, that would be a collaborative thing. So it all depends. And you find too that being working with partnering, the fact that we work so well together and understand where each other is going. So when we're trying to set on dancers, male, female roles and things, we just automatically do that together.
When you came to Fargo, it wasn't all easy. You were here starting something new, and it was somewhat competitive, I suppose, looking at it from an artistic viewpoint. Where did you first open your studios?
I rented space in a church in Moorhead, actually, for a few students who were interested in my teaching then. And then we moved as it started to grow, and the fact that people were aware that I was teaching said he was still terribly involved in his views, so he couldn't have the extracurricular time outside of the school system. Then we moved into Block 6, top of Block 6, and we were there for about three seasons, maybe. And I loved it up there. It had a very nice atmosphere of New York, Chicago. It was a real old, you know, what you expect a dance studio to look like. And it had great floors. We did a lot of renovation in there. And then, of course, they wanted to refurbish and remodel that complex. And we needed, therefore, to move into another site. And so, ironically, we start looking all over town. There's some wonderful space around town. And, of course, when you're starting out with it, we probably had a handful of maybe 87, 90 students. Looking around, there was just no way we could afford the amount of space one needs, dance space, at the rate of square footage goes. So anyway, we're driving around, and in this particular building that we're located in now, the back end of it seemed to have an accessibility of back door and looked very convenient. We thought, gee, we don't know exactly what's in here, but I maybe they would just rent out the back part to us. So we talked to Mr. Ben Anderley and said, can we rent this for what it was and what we were going to use it for? And he said, sure, you could have it. And we said, well, we assumed that that meant we could rent it at the price we were talking. He said, no, you can have it. You can have the whole building. He had seen performances we had done in our involvement with the in-schools programs in Trollwood and collaborations with the community theater and the university systems. And said, I think that you could have the whole building. I said, yeah, serious. And they were, and they gifted it to us. And we are constantly in a state of remodeling. It's a wonderful asset to have. And there's still much, much more potential. We are indeed grateful.
That's extraordinary generosity.
That's extraordinary generosity.
Now, what's included in the building? This is at 824 Main. And tell me exactly what it's composed.
I understand it used to be an old creamery. And what it is, there is a basement, a ground level, and a second story level. And we have presently two studio spaces. One is a smaller size space that is used for tap, small rehearsal situations. And then the master studio is over the garage. There are dressing rooms. There are currently offices upstairs and down now that we've made in to house our director of development, director of sales and marketing, business manager, and costuming. And sets and props are all downstairs. We're hoping to remodel. We desperately need to remodel the garage into a third studio space because we have something now currently about 200 kids on a waiting list that we can accommodate because we have to remodel the space. We presently teach on an average about 480 children this season.
That is surprising.
It's grown incredibly fast. I talk about all these wonderful department heads that I have, director of development and director of, or business manager. In the beginning, it was just Eddie and myself, and then finally, and the receptionists and secretaries and dancers in exchange for classes. And all of that got done by volunteer work. And a very, very active board in the beginning. We wanted to see dance take its equal place in Fargo Moorhead along with the symphony.
I think it's rapidly, it has done that. I think you can say that it's done that. The Christmas shows certainly haven't attracted attention, maybe of a limited number of people, as you've said, but it has made an impact. Looking ahead, I think there certainly is going to be some growth here. You went from one or two students in Moorhead to 400 or more. And that includes parents, includes the siblings, and it certainly would appear to grow. Do you feel that way?
Oh yes, we are at probably phase two of when we decided finally to we're going to stay here and fight this out because it really was a monster. We created a monster, and no intent of doing it. It just snowballed because it was obviously for it. And we also thought it was important to educate the community about dance. They had a preconceived idea that it was only ballet or it was very bad modern and that you just run around in tights and make a lot of shapes or sizes or you wear tutus and pointe shoes and that's it. That's what dance meant, I feel, to them. So we were able to, because of the diversity of the company and our choreography, show the public that there's a vast array of dance and we open our concerts that you may not like at all, but one of those particular offerings you will find very intriguing, which may bring you out next time to see what else we may do. And as you sit and observe something you thought you didn't like, and you find out you do like it, they eventually become a fan of dance, and that's what we're trying to do. And we feel that we really, when we first came here, the art series that hosted dance companies, NDSU, MSU, Concordia, and art series, you would have an Alvin Ailey and their company come in here, and you have if you had 100, 200 people in the audience, you'd be lucky. Now, and I feel it's really because of the activity of the Red River Dance Performing Company, the places are sold out because that whole education of youth, of college, middle-aged people and senior citizens are finding out that there's a lot of variety in dance, and I like it. You know? What we hope to do, the mission statement of the company, is simply to be recognized nationally as a professional regional dance company, which we are beginning to be recognized as, and that we are noted for our original choreography and concepts of forming quality artists, our continuing law and ongoing educational programs and outreach projects. That's what it is since 79. That's what it will continue to be. We have to create a season that will support professional dancers, and that is the route that lets you out that. If you do not have dancers, you don't have a company. If you don't have quality dancers, if you don't have time to train them, if you don't have time to rehearse them, if you don't have time to create good concerts, whether you're at home or whether you're on tour, it's valueless. And so it's an ongoing battle to escalate funding to make all that happen. Therefore, we need another studio so we can bring in more superb instructors that will alleviate my principal dancers from instruction low, where they can go back out in the community and work in the residencies and schools. And we can make larger home concert seasons, go back to 3 concert seasons here at home versus 2, and go on the road with the product and everything else before. So yes, it's only, if you look at the reality in regards when you're talking the regional professional dance company, we are exactly where we're supposed to be. Well, we're ahead of the game. If you're looking in retrospect to Milwaukee or Boston Ballet or San Francisco Ballet or Atlantic Dance Theater, what we've done in 10 years, it's taken most of those companies probably 18 to get where we are at this point. So if the community still enjoys our product, if they feel we can keep the artistic integrity where it's been and continue to escalate, I hope that we can keep that timeline still very fast and keep good artists here.
When I was in school in the 30s at what was once called North Dakota State College and State University, I recall my first experience was to see the Ballet Russe was brought to, it wasn't maybe from Russia, but it was probably from New York, but it was an extraordinary experience. And that, just an isolated incident, will show you how empty this was.
Uh-huh.
There was a Mrs. Blanich, Beverly Talbison Blanich, who had very young children. I guess they were attempting classical ballet, but there was a great dearth of that sort of thing that you now have launched in Farnham Market. You came here with the idea that you were going to raise a family. Tell me about your family.
Okay, yes, I wasn't going to do a thing. I was going to be a professor's wife and go to PTA meetings and raise my family. My last child was born here that September of 78. I have a 11-year-old, Marty, who plays piano and enjoys basketball. I have a 15-year-old son who is a martial artist, is a second degree brown belt in karate, and has now decided to take tap and jazz and ballet. And that's not come easy for him. He works very hard. He's not gifted because he has parents who dance, which most people think always is the case. It's not. He works very hard but accomplishes much. And then I have my daughter, happens to be in the company, Melanie. She is 18. She had originally started out as an ice skater here. And I think it was 4 seasons, got up at 4 o'clock in the morning to transport her to the ice rink, in the Moorhead ice rink, at 5:30 for her skate time to do her patch and her freestyle. And there was a change of heart in her a little bit in regards to the program and the things. She just didn't feel like she was accomplishing what she should with the amount of time that she was putting in. So I said, so I'll dance a year and take a break. Maybe it was the amount of, you know, pushing too much early in the morning. And put your time in on the floor. Your dance will always enhance your skating anyway. So then she got very turned on about the dance, and now is presently a member of the company and is on the teaching staff and teaches beginning level of fitness. And
does she have aspirations beyond the thing?
She would like to, she wants to find out how good she can become. I don't know, it's such an individual art. everybody's growth rate is so different. Some are very natural and it just happens automatic. Other people are scrutinized and try to digest everything, what's your body supposed to be doing and all this. She sort of lands in the middle. She's very intelligent about her development and is enough of a little bit of natural stuff going. But so there's, I don't know, it's interesting. Each of my students, each 400 of them, consume this all differently. You know, it's not something that you either dance or you don't. There's a lot that, she has a lot there. There's much that happens on stage for her. And that you have to be, she understands, she was in a trunk with us in her first couple of years as a child when Eddie and I were still on the road. She understands what the discipline is. She understands the hurt physically and emotionally. She understands the pressure. And that, before anybody else in this area or dance with you about that, and I don't know if she's ready to give up a lot for that, knowing that it takes so much to do that.
Someone that you can see maybe in the future a real artist?
Oh, yes. There are presently in the company, there is a unique handful of people that are... is that recording for you? There are people that are very, very gifted, and as we train them, they're getting very, very proficient. And in retrospect, to we are presently members of Regional Dance America, formerly known as National Association of Regional Ballet Companies. And in that, you are adjudicated, and you're invited to perform if you're good enough to ballet festivals across America. And in our second season now, we've been adjudicated by two wonderful, wonderful people. Muriel Topaz from the Juilliard, the director of the Juilliard Department of Dance, and last week Mr. Keith Martin, formerly of the Royal Ballet, was here. And you do class for them, and you do performances that they may select to go to the regional festivals. Having become involved with that scene and having these wonderful, wonderful people, particular people, again, we have come a long way in the not only with the company, but in the training of these dedicated young people, that we have a substance of performers here that surpass many, many regional companies across America. And I don't think Fargo Moorhead knows that, the caliber of artistry that is being developed out of here.
I don't think they do, man. That's exciting.
It's very exciting. And yes, I have some, I can, you know, spot some little six-year-old and you think, oh my goodness, is that American Ballet Theatre material or what? You know, you just really want to. Or you see someone who is definitely a more on the theatrical side and probably will turn out to be an actress versus dance. You have the thing that it does do out of, if you have, normally if you have one coming out of 400, the percentage is normally so rare, but here, I don't know, it's a very unique place. Not necessarily here, but this, I think it's because there is so much art, there's, the arts are supported so well and the kids in this area are exposed to them so early. And through school systems and the fact that, you know, it's such a nice community that we have, the ratio of potential is greater than most communities. I find that the thing that dance does do, excuse me, the majority of the people who study here are not going to be professional dancers or professional entertainers, but it teaches discipline and it teaches commitment. And it teaches appreciation for yourself, and you become so much more secure with your own anatomy and how to handle yourself in a crowd to get up and make a speech. So you're putting out better doctors, better lawyers, better clergy people, better sales representatives, because they become far more secure about themselves through this art form, having studied it. What we're also dealing with, too, is educating these. The majority of them will be the entrepreneurs or the contributors of the arts in the future. These young people, because they have studied, they will become intelligent audience goers, and they will put expectations on all arts organizations, no matter where they end up, not necessarily here, but anywhere. And they will indeed be the ones who are the founders and the builders and the impresarios of the arts in America in the future.
I want to thank you for visiting with me. This has been another one of these tapes for the audio history at Morehead State University. And I've spent the last half hour with Kathy Gasper, who's executive director of Red River Dance and Performing Company. It's been a real pleasure, and I wish the organization every success.
Thank you very much.